Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
As September is Healthy Aging Month, and I was just looking to see if I could find some statistics to see, you know, as you get to be 65 or older, you know, how many people are maintaining their households. A large majority apparently are still maintaining their households. That's about 76% across the country, across America. But what's interesting here is that about 30% of them are living alone, which can be a concern. And I know some families, it's one of those like sort of awkward conversations. What do you do? You know, what do we do to make sure our loved ones are as safe as possible? They are living out their years to the best of their ability. And it's interesting, right? Because in some ways, it's amazing. People are living longer than ever before. But, you know, as we age and health becomes way more important, I think we all know that, you know, thanks to medicine and health in general, we are living longer. So that's great. We're experiencing more. I can't tell you how many people are like, oh, my grandmother is now holding my kids. So I'm like, wow, more and more people are great grandparents. Like, that's very cool. But with that, it's even more important than ever before to develop plans for living arrangements in the future if it's what is meant to be, essentially. So I wanted to talk a little bit more about this morning with Mario D'Aquila. He is with the award-winning home care agency Assisted Living Services Incorporated, which is in Cheshire, as well as right here in Westport, the COO of Assisted Living Services. Good morning to you, Mario. Thank you so much for being here.
Good morning. Thank you for having me today.
So talk to us about that initial conversation. What do you find with the people who end up using your services? How does that conversation even get started? Because it could be very difficult for families.
Oh, it certainly can. And, I think one of the main things that folks need to notice is that paying attention to age-related decline is something to really note, right? First, even before having the conversation, that the person might need some extra care around the home.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, because that's just it. It may not be that you need to go to a living facility, but even to just, I just remember when my grandmother, who lived with us most of my life before she passed, it was a fight constantly between my mother and her. I don't want around the clock help, or I don't want a nurse coming this time because I'd rather do that. I mean, it really can be a very challenging topic, even if you're bringing help into the house.
It can. And you know what? The thing is that the age-related decline can happen quickly. And to start noticing those warning signs is really important. And I have a few that I can go over with you. I think this is important for folks to note, even before starting to have that conversation. I mean, forgetfulness and confusion is one thing that you want to keep an eye out for. So let's say mom or dad is used to certain areas around the home. They're used to going in the kitchen, but all of a sudden they're like, oh, where's the kitchen? Or, you know, what do I do with my keys after I get inside, right? If they're starting to ask you certain questions, forgetting names, right? These are some warning signs, right? Neglect of physical appearance and basic hygiene. If mom or dad isn't bathing, brushing their teeth, combing their hair, things like that, if they look a little disheveled. Neglecting of medical needs, that's really important to note. If they're not taking their medications on time or if they're not going to any doctor's appointments, it's very important to note. If they're having trouble performing routine tasks or chores, you know, if you go in the home and it's messier than usual, or they're having trouble cooking or cleaning, these are things that are notable. Personality changes, you know, if something's just not right with mom or dad, they're not generally an angry person, but all of a sudden they're getting angry really quickly. Or even vice versa, if they're becoming withdrawn, and let's say that they're a very animated person, they're withdrawn, that's something to look out for. Inability to handle finances, you know, if the bills are stacking up, things like that, or just unsteadiness, or a recent history of falling. Those are things to look out for. And then you could start having the conversation with your loved one to say, hey, what really are your wishes? Do you want to stay home? Do you want to move to, you know, community style living? It's really important to understand what they want prior to, you know, making a decision for them.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like, Mario, there are several options that people can really do their research and figure out what would be the best fit for their loved ones. Do you mind just outlining those?
I certainly can. So there are various types of senior care, right? And I think it's important for, you know, families to know that it's not a one-size-fits-all package.
Mm.
You know, there is home care, right, which is broadly defined into two different categories. A lot of people think home care is just all the same thing when it's really not. There's non-medical home care, which is, you know, essentially what our agency does, where we are able to allow a person to age in place with family at home, providing care for 2 hours up to 24 hours a day. And this is for individuals who need help with laundry, meal prep, household cleaning, personal care, right? Care with activities of daily living, providing, you know, support with personal hygiene, getting around the home, one-on-one supervision. But then there's another kind of home care, which is skilled home care. So if you need some health care in the home, where maybe you need a nurse to visit for, you know, an hour a week, or a physical therapist or an occupational therapist to come and visit to get you back up on your feet for sort of episodic care, these types of care are generally covered by Medicare or Medicaid, right? So and so those are the two what I would consider categories of home care, but there's also community-based living too, assisted living facilities. There's continuing care retirement communities. There's independent living communities, and there's also long-term and short-term rehab care as well, which could be fitting for some individuals who maybe don't want to age in place, or maybe aging at home isn't appropriate because their medical needs are a little too comprehensive.
Mm. So, Mario, what do you suggest for our listeners this morning to start the conversation and to do their research? Where can they go to find out more information or to even connect with you?
Absolutely. Our website at assistedlivingct.com has a ton of different resources that individuals can use to start the conversation, to research funding for home care and other senior care types. And, you know, I think it's really important for folks, if they do have an aging family member, is to start researching now, right? You know, you don't want to wait until, you know, an emergency happens and you're scrambling and you're looking at options and maybe you only have a day to figure it out. Check it out now. Go online. The Department of Social Services has a lot of great resources on their website. So some of this, you know, type of care can be paid, you know, through Medicaid waiver programs. I think that's important for folks to notice. And, you know, the state does a great job with actually helping aging individuals age in place. So I'd highly recommend going on the Department of Social Services website as well, amongst others. And mainly our website can have that information and resource too.
Well, Mario, I really appreciate you coming on this morning, speaking to us, especially during September, which is Healthy Aging Month, and talking to us about these resources. So I thank you again for coming on the show and taking the time to talk about all these options.
Definitely. Thank you for having me today.
Absolutely. Mario DiAquila, who is the COO of Assisted Living Services in Cheshire, as well as Westport here in Connecticut, on WICC. So many of you know my parents have been in Fairfield for most of my life, and they still live there today. So from time to time, I get the newsletter from Fairfield because, you know, I like signed up for it to get those updates and all of that. And I came across this late last week from First Select Woman Brenda Kupchick talking about affordable housing and development in Fairfield. It starts off by saying recent development proposals in our town continue to be a real frustration amongst our residents. And it's a topic that's now been in local papers, including even the New York Times, over that past weekend. So I wanted to have Brenda come on, talk a little bit about this, and we'll dive into it a little deeper. She's here right now, First Select Woman Brenda Kupchick of Fairfield. Good morning. So glad you're with us.
Good morning, Melissa.
So tell us a little bit about, first of all, what you wrote to your residents and what you had read in the New York Times. I did peruse that article that you're talking about from earlier this month. But for people who may have missed it, what did it talk about?
Well, the New York Times article, you know, frankly, I think it was more of an opinion piece than it was really an in-depth dive into affordable housing laws in Connecticut. And they didn't reach out at all to towns that are being impacted by it or even legislators. So Hugh Bailey of the Connecticut Post wrote something a few weeks back, and he mentioned me specifically as being someone who is against affordable housing laws. And he did it in a context that's not, I don't think was really fair.
What do you say?
So I saw some, well, he basically, it was, you know, it was an opinion piece saying that some area leaders, including Brenda Kupchick, are against the 8-30G statute, which is an affordable housing law. And it wasn't very positive. It didn't have all the details of the law and basically say we have a blanket, some of us, including myself, have a blanket dislike for affordable housing in our towns, which is 100% not true.
Right. Yeah.
So I just felt compelled to just sort of set the record straight and put together something. And this is something I've been working on. Listen, I served in the legislature for 10 years. I was on the housing committee the whole time I was there. And I was the ranking member at the latter part of my term. I spent a lot of time listening to, long committee meetings, working with the majority party on making changes to the 8-30G law, trying to explain to sort of urban legislators who don't really have an impact on it, even smaller towns throughout the state, what this law has become. And it's become a tool that some developers, can use in a predatory fashion. And basically, they can just overbuild, blow through all local zoning laws, and build very big housing developments if they just set aside some of them as affordable. And what I was trying to do for my period of time in the legislature, and I continue to talk about it now because the residents of the town of Fairfield are pretty upset about this.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
yeah,
you invest in a house, you buy a Cape Cod house, or you have a, you know, you put all your money into something. And then, you know, one day you can wake up and your next door neighbor could sell to a developer and there could be a 6-story building with 100 or more units right next door to your house.
Mm-hmm.
And right up to the property line. And it just, the whole law just doesn't make sense. And I tried for a long time to try to get the majority of legislators in Hartford to see that if you really wanted to create more affordable housing, this just isn't bearing out. You're not getting the numbers if you look at it closely.
Well, and you know what's interesting about it, Brenda, if you don't mind me just throwing my 2 cents in here, and this is not really an opinion, this is truly a fact, because every time I feel like I do a story on affordable housing, I roll my eyes a lot of the times. Most of the units in these quote-unquote affordable housing complexes are not affordable. They're not even affordable. So a lot of times you've got developers who create, like, I'm very pro, let's make Connecticut affordable. I'm very pro that. And for people who think, oh, it's just people who live below the poverty line, it may not be that. I think there are many other people who also, like, I look at, we're a young family. And if you were to tell me, like, I grew up in Fairfield. I was blessed to live in Fairfield, Connecticut. But when I moved back here with an infant and my husband and I with a dual income, we couldn't afford to live in Fairfield. That was not an option for us unless we wanted a place that was going to be a fixer-upper or very run down or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. And so we moved out, not only out of Fairfield, but out of Fairfield County. I mean, we had to leave. It was so unaffordable. So it's not just a matter of people who live like below the poverty. We don't, but it's so difficult to be able to live in Connecticut in general. So I'm very for finding affordable housing. But like you look at these complexes that are going up across Connecticut, across wherever, and they're like, oh, there are 10 units that are affordable. I'm like, you put in 200. What do you mean there are 10? Like, I don't get it. I think there's a lot of also just misleading. I don't like the term affordable housing because having a couple of units out of the majority affordable to me is not affordable housing. It's that's just not. No, I don't
and,
think
and,
so.
And to your point, in the 8-30G statute, it says that those affordable units have to be based on the median area income.
Right. Correct.
So
correct.
The median area income for Fairfield County is not that affordable.
No
so
kidding.
What happens is
correct.
The developer comes in and says, I'm going to build 100 units, goes to the planning and zoning and says, I'm going to build 100 units. I'm going to blow through all the zoning laws because I'm going to make a portion of them affordable according to the 8-30G statute, their median area income. Okay. So they do and they build them. What happens a lot of times is those affordable, let's quote unquote affordable units, don't even get leased out. So they can remain empty. And I've seen it and it happens. A lot of them just sit empty. So they get to build all these other market rate units, make a boatload of money, and those affordable units sit empty. How is that helpful?
How is that filling a need? Other than an agenda,
how is that really helping?
It's just filling an agenda for a developer. So earlier this month, the New York Times wrote an article about affordable housing and actually referenced First Electwoman Brenda Kupchick of Fairfield. And I've read the article, and the way that they sort of characterized Brenda, which is it's sort of the way of the world now, right? If you say that you don't like something, all of a sudden you're just totally closed-minded and you hate everybody. The way that it was written, though, it made it sound like, you know, Brenda's very, like, just totally against it. And unfortunately, that's been kind of the characteristic for a lot of people, especially in Fairfield lately. I feel like in the last couple of years, Brenda, it's a very common thing. I have Alexis Harrison on the show quite often, as well as I know Lisa Wexler has Alexis on her show as well. And that's one of the like troubling things is here's somebody who's very educated. She works with zoning in all of that. And she understands the law, I think, inside and out, upwards, downwards, you know, every way you look at it. And when she comes to the table, she's not just saying like, I don't want, the look of Fairfield to change. Like no one's saying that. But the way affordable housing is being handled right now is not the best way to handle it. I don't think people disagree with the idea of bringing affordable housing, but the way it's being handled, is it the best way we're handling it? Many people say no. So to get back to what we were just talking about, Brenda, you know, in regards to 830G, you know, what in your opinion should be done at this point? Because like I mentioned, a lot of Fairfield residents are very upset with the way things are trending and what the future is probably going to hold or could hold for affordable housing.
Right. So, yeah. So it's become sort of a philosophical debate and sometimes even political, and it shouldn't be.
I agree.
So, for example, the 8-30G statute was written 30 years ago. And what I think other area county lead, Fairfield County mostly, because this is where it's being, utilized in a sort of a weaponized fashion as opposed to other parts of the state, is that it's not been even a discussion. Look at the data. I've pored over it. And so has Alexis Harrison, who's been involved in these issues for some time. If you look at the data, it's not delivering the desired result. It's not building considerable amounts of affordable housing in the Fairfield County area. It's just not doing that. You don't have to even have a discussion or a debate or a philosophical disagreement. Look at the numbers. It's not working. I mean, when you have a law that doesn't count affordable units that were built before the law was enacted, and in this case, Fairfield has over 200 because the former first select woman, the only one that ever served in Fairfield, was very pro-affordable housing. She's the one who started the Operation Hope organization. She made sure to build affordable units in the town of Fairfield way before this law was enacted. None of those units count. Even though they meet the criteria, 40-year deed restrictions, affordable, all of this, they don't count because they were built before the law was enacted. Now, how does that make sense to any common sense person? It doesn't. And if you just look at a lot of it, for example, in the 8-30G statute, seniors on fixed incomes who need affordable housing are only counted as a half a point toward the goal under the statute. Now,
what does that mean, a half a point? What does that mean?
So the statute counts points.
Mm-hmm.
So if you build a family unit that meets the criteria, 40-year deed restriction, it's affordable, under the medium area income, all of those things.
Okay.
It counts as a point.
Got it.
If you build a senior, unit, so say Town of Fairfield wants to build 5 units of affordable housing for seniors, each of those units will only count as a half a point under the law.
Hmm.
So how does that make sense?
It doesn't. No, it doesn't. I mean, yeah, I guess that's why it sounds more puzzling. Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
So when I would have these discussions with, the housing advocates when I was serving on the housing committee, I would say, why would seniors count less than somebody who's not a senior? It doesn't make sense to me. Why? Who's more vulnerable? Who has the least amount of ability to earn an income than someone who's retired? That has a fixed income. It mm-hmm. doesn't make sense. And they basically really wouldn't have an answer for that. So my point is, I think, honestly, having worked on this for many, many years, I just feel that the whole entire law needs to be scrapped and it needs to be redone. I don't understand why both sides on this issue, all the advocates and people who care about this issue, but think that it's being utilized as a weapon by predatory development. Why not sit down and try to work on incentives for towns? For example, we're building in town. Like, we just acquired a piece of private property. We used our housing trust fund. We are using a part of our own town property. And our goal is we just literally voted on this. I've been working on it for like 6 months. And we are going to build 4 duplexes that are all going to be affordable. And we're partnering with Habitat for Humanity to do this. Now, this is, to me, a home run. There should be a fund for a town like mine, who is doing this proactively, to be able to help, to apply for funding for this type of thing.
To help fund that,
These will all be affordable, all of them. There will be no market rate. There won't be overdevelopment. And
so, real quick, Brenda, what's affordable? What's affordable? Could you give me an idea of, what they're charging?
Well, it's not even being built yet, but it will be under the statutes affordable. It will be even more affordable than what is outlined in the 8-30G statute.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great question, Brenda, which is why not scrap it and kind of start over? And unfortunately, I think you kind of hinted at it at the beginning of this, which is sometimes politics are much louder than what is logical. And a lot of times I feel like some of the things that get decided on is just so that in the headlines, you've got a really great headline that makes you look like a great politician, essentially. I'm not saying you, Brenda. I'm saying in general, for people who are just listening. I think sometimes actions are made because it makes your resume look really good. But when you do some deeper digging, you realize you put a Band-Aid on something that needed stitches or really full surgery.
Some of this is just philosophical, right?
Exactly.
I mean, there's no reason why people who have different points of view mm-hmm. should just sit down and have a discussion, look at the numbers, and come up with something that works better.
Yeah.
This clearly is not working.
Well, Brenda, I really appreciate you opening up the conversation, not just in your newsletter with your residents, but also here on WICC. I think it's an issue that we continue to tackle here on our show and across all our shows, and I thank you for being a part of it.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to discuss it. It's an important issue, Melissa. Thank you.
I agree. Thank you so much. Brenda Kupchick, first elect woman of Fairfield, right here on WICC.
If you don't know, now you will. St. Vincent's Medical Center and Aquarion Water Company are launching their 12th annual House of Hope food drive. It actually kicks off today, and it's going to go until November 16th. And joining me this morning for more of the details on this is Edna Borchetta, who is the manager of the Mission Services and Community Impact Programs at St. V's for the Fairfield region. Good morning, Edna. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. I'm well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, of course. First of all, Edna, before we get started, is it Borchetta or Borchetta?
It's Borchetta.
Okay, just making sure. Perfect. Just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, thanks.
Listen, growing up with a last name Sheketoff, I can't tell you how many times it's gotten and it will continue to get botched. So I hate when I do that to other people. So I just wanted to make sure. Well, I'm so glad that you're here,
Edna.
So first of all, tell us about the annual food drive. Again, going into its 12th year today, what got it started and what's it all about?
Sure. So back in 2011, leaders from Hartford Healthcare, St. Vincent's Medical Center, and Aquarion Water Company decided to partner together to bring a program to the community that would positively impact the residents of Greater Bridgeport every day. So that's basically what we did, was create a food drive, a two-month-long food drive that focuses on collecting nutritious, non-perishable foods to support local food pantries. And this year we have 7 pantries that we're helping to stock the shelves right before Thanksgiving.
I know we are partners with the Bridgeport Rescue Mission, and oftentimes they will give us kind of a snapshot of what hunger looks like. People who are just not getting access to good food and to a lot of it for not just themselves, but their families. Could you talk a little bit about the importance of this in our surrounding community? Because oftentimes, I'm sure you know, Edna, people will always think, you know, where can I go to serve or where can I go to help? And they think other countries. But it is amazing because there's a massive need right here in our own backyard in Fairfield County.
There sure is, Melissa. And, you know, during the pandemic, about 17% of the population in our area needed emergency food assistance. So they used those food pantries. So this food, you know, when you give to a food pantry, when you give to House of Hope, it goes right onto the table of families in need. So the need is real. And right now, people are really struggling to make ends meet. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in the current environment, I think some people don't think about it this way, but sometimes people are making the choice between putting food on the table and buying important medications or mm-hmm. paying their rent or utilities. So these kinds of programs really help to offset those costs for those families who are struggling.
Yeah. In fact, according to Feeding America, here in Connecticut, over 364,000 people are facing hunger. And what's really sad is about 92,000 of them are children, which is just very hard. That's 1 in 8 children here in Connecticut facing hunger, which is very, that's very hard to swallow. And so we're talking this morning to Enda Porchetta, who is the manager of the Mission Services and Community Impact Programs at St. Vincent's Medical Center in the Fairfield region. And we're talking about this event. It's called House of Hope. There is going to be a ribbon cutting, it sounds like, Edna, this afternoon as well, marking the 12th annual food drive. So what do people need to know? What do they need to know? What are you guys looking for? Are there drop-offs every single day until we get to November 16th? Where do they go? All that good stuff.
Oh, great. Well, so we have our House of Hope Collection Center, which is a cute little shed that's decorated to look out like a house. It's located right outside the St. Vincent's Medical Center Cancer Institute, and it is available 24/7. So while the house itself, the front doors are locked, there's a side compartment that people can just open, kind of like a library book drop, where you can just drop off your donations 24/7. We'll also have a shopping cart inside in the lobby where people can leave their donations as well. So those are for food donations. We also, just internally as an organization, we have we'll have boxes throughout the hospital where employees can donate food as well. What the type of food we're looking for is really nutritious, shelf-stable food. So things like low-sodium, no-salt canned veggies, low-sugar, low-sodium pasta sauce, unsweetened applesauce, dried fruit, shelf-stable milk, whole wheat pasta, brown rice, canned or dried beans, canned tuna, and canned chicken. So natural peanut butter, all of these types of things that are nutritionally dense and can really help people meet their nutritional needs. So we're focusing on healthy foods for sure.
Edna Porchetta. Oh, sorry. Go for it.
No, go ahead.
I was going to ask you, it said that this is going to go to some organizations in the surrounding area. Which ones? Do you mind telling us?
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to share. So I know you mentioned that you partner with Bridgeport Rescue Mission. They are one of our recipient organizations. Also, Healthy Choices for Seniors, the Port 5 Naval Veterans, Spooner House in Shelton, Sterling House in Stratford, the Thomas Merton Center in Bridgeport and the South End Community Center in Stratford.
Wow. So it's going to go to a lot of different locations, which is great. And one more time, if you don't mind, Edna, where do people go specifically and what times do they come to drop off their donations?
Sure. So at the medical center, we will take donations 24/7 at the collection center. So there's you come through the main entrance, and right in front of the cancer center entrance, there's a little house, and you can just go right onto the right side of the house and drop your donations there. You can also come into the lobby and drop off food there. We also are accepting monetary donations through Venmo. If it's easier to make a monetary donation, we'll gladly accept and do the shopping for you. And so our Venmo address is at House of Hope Food Drive. You can also call me, Edna Borchetta, at 475-210-6393, and I can provide you more ways to donate. And you can always stop by the hospital and leave your donation with the front desk if you have a monetary donation as well.
Yeah, I think this is an amazing effort. Again, going into its 12th year, the House of Hope annual food drive. It's happening starting today at 11 o'clock. And you can head on over there with your donations. Or as mentioned by Edna, you can give money towards the effort as well. Edna, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Melissa, for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to share this wonderful program with the community.
Absolutely. Edna Borchetta, who's the manager of the Mission Services and Community Impact Programs at St. V's here on WICC. And actually coming up right after traffic and weather, we will chat with one of those recipient organizations. We'll talk to the Sterling House in Stratford coming up here on WICC. Now, when you start to get into the habit of something, it becomes second nature. When inflation got to be so out of control, I remember sitting with my husband, we pray at night, and I said, I feel really bad, because I know during the pandemic, obviously people were really hungry. We know the statistics aren't great. 1 in 10 people here in Connecticut face hunger. Yes, believe it or not, probably somebody in your office space, maybe 1 or 2 people, face hunger. That's the statistics according to Feeding America. 1 in 8 children in Connecticut are facing hunger. And so while I'm sitting there with my husband, you know, this was last year, honestly, and we're talking about how people can't afford to even feed themselves, let alone their children. And I thought, you know, like, what can we do? So not only did we start to, you know, take 1 or 2 cans every time we'd go to the grocery store and drop it off, there's usually boxes there that'll say, hey, if you want to put this towards the food pantries in our local community, you know, drop off a non-perishable item here. But we started to teach our son the same thing. And it became kind of fun for him and a very easy way at 4 years old to start realizing that, hey, you're super blessed that you get a meal 3 times a day every day, because there are kids right next door in another town that don't have that same privilege. And so it's very easy things that you could start to do. And I think there are amazing events that go on throughout the year, every single year, that also provide the opportunity for not just you, but for the young lives in your lives to also learn about how blessed they are and how they could give back in a very, very simple way. And I'm talking this morning about the House of Hope annual food drive. This is their 12th year of doing this. It's St. V's. They have partnered up with Aquarion Water Company as well as some recipient organizations to have this food drive. It's kicking off this morning at 11 o'clock. And I wanted to talk to one of the organizations who is benefiting from this, because I think you can hear it much more from them. They're on the front lines, essentially. They are seeing the people that need this food and could really speak to it in depth. So this morning, I want to welcome back to the show a very familiar face, because I think I just talked to Amanda maybe a week or so ago. Amanda Meeson is here, and Amanda is the executive director at Sterling House Community Center in Stratford. Good morning, Amanda. Thanks for being back on the show.
Good morning, Melissa. I was so excited to hear it was you.
I know. I was excited
too.
Come
back with Melissa anytime.
Right. I felt the same way when Jocelyn said, oh, do you mind if we talk to Sterling House? I was like, oh, is it Amanda? Bring back Amanda. Bring her back. I love her.
No, I love it. I love it.
I'm so glad that you're here. Yeah. I mean, Amanda, talk to us. I know, you know, people are probably familiar. You were just on the show talking about Sterling House. But I am curious, you know, you get to see people at face value, and you really know what's going on in the community and the need there. So could you talk a little bit about that with our listeners, sort of paint the picture so people know why it's so important to donate?
Yeah, absolutely. And I really appreciate you sharing this story in your own house, because I think that what we've seen, certainly through the pandemic, and House of Hope is such a good example of that, is using this as a vehicle to inspire those kinds of conversations in our community and in our homes, and to raise good humans, as we say at Sterling House, to make sure that they understand, you know, you have snacks in your bag and they're ready for your son, and that is indeed a privilege nowadays. So what we're seeing, certainly in the pandemic, as Edna spoke to, there was just, you know, large amounts of emergency support. People were panicked, and the lines were long, and that was a challenging time. And now it's really shifted to, I think, a supplemental situation where we have, you know, our lines are filled with people who are back at work, you know, and depending on the wage that they're making, they're really having trouble making ends meet with these increasing costs, and they're using places like us and the partners that are also receiving food from House of Hope as a stop to get some relief, to keep their head above water, and certainly to leave with a little hope themselves. I think that when our pantry patrons understand the massive amounts of, like, corporate and community support that go into these things, they're very grateful really, really humble and verbal to share that with us, which is also a beautiful thing.
Could you, Amanda, and I hate asking this question, I have to be honest, I think it's a very uncomfortable question, but there's a reason I'm saying it. Can you also paint the picture of what this person looks like? So oftentimes there is a massive misconception of who is hungry living in our state. And it really bothers me. I have to be honest. It really bothers me because I know there's this depiction of somebody who is lazy, who is using the state, you know, for whatever they can get out of it. And sure, there might be a few people who do that. But there are also there's a lot of people who are single moms, for example, working two jobs, just trying to make ends meet to pay for their car, to get their kids to school, or whatever the case may be. Like, I think a lot of the times, like a pursuit of happiness, where people fall on hard times and they just can't make it work, and they need the support of the community. Could you talk to that a little bit?
Yeah, I think that's such a brave point for you to bring up. I think at Sterling House, you know, we're a community center that does lots of things. And so people are walking in the door. They might need food. They might be carrying a donation. They might be coming to pick up a child from our preschool, right? And so we welcome everyone. And that's important, because the answer to your question is everyone's in that line. Everyone. Mm-hmm. And to your point, we're working with a mom who's in a domestic violence situation, and she's recently left, and she has children. And, you know, when she pulls up to get the support that she needed yesterday, she has a really nice car, and she looks like she's got it together, and she is just on the brink, right? And so there is a good amount of our population that says, well, she must not need food. Look what she's driving. And,
right.
And she just hasn't even gotten it together to recalibrate her life or her situation. And so I think it really is important. And if you want to be generous in your heart and in your spirit, that you do so trusting places like us and trusting, you know, Bridgeport Rescue Mission and Healthy Choices for Seniors, Spooner, Thomas Merton, Port 5 Naval, South Bend Community Center, all these organizations who are trained, ready, and experienced to serve the community with your generous donations. I think that's really important, because it is everybody right now. COVID was an equalizer and a game changer in that way, and more so than ever. So I'm really glad you brought that up.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you, Amanda. And again, if you want to do simple acts of kindness, something that would really be so extraordinary for people, neighbors, colleagues, friends, family, that you may not even realize are struggling, but in fact are, you can get in on the 12th annual food drive, the House of Hope Drive. It's starting today at 11 o'clock, and it is running until November 16th and benefiting many organizations, including Sterling House in Stratford. And Amanda Meeson with the Sterling House, I really appreciate you popping back on the show this morning, getting up early and joining us here on Melissa in the Morning. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Melissa. I'll see you soon.
All right. Sounds good.